help the people close to me. They help the people close to them and then hopefully. Friends of they friends, friends heed the notion. We started off locally and now it's changed globally.
That's what's going on, y'all? We back. Another episode of Unguarded. Season 3, Episode 2. We have Val Perez. Check out the credits for the full name.
Yeah, you have to keep listening to get to the, you know, that's back. Jory's, I don't want to say butchering, but Jory's interpretation, personal interpretation of people's names, you'll be able to hear. And for the record, Jory and I are recording this intro. Is this the second? No, the third. The 3rd of January in the year 2023. And we recorded with Val last year, which was only like a month ago. I think we're going to do a better job of kind of putting things in context. But how was your 2022, Jory?
It was cool. It was a bit of a transformation, you know, some things triggering me to grow, which was needed. But 2022 was a lot of lessons learned, I think, and it was good. It was good. All the lessons, L's, I think was good for me. So I'm grateful for 2022.
Well, let's stay on the pause. So what's like a highlight, or what's like a very memorable thing from that time?
Of 2022?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the end was a highlight for me of really just taking more time for myself. Like finally like disconnecting a little bit. I think that's the highlight for me, like towards the end of just being a little, knowing it's okay to like not worry about nobody else and be more about Jory.
So you didn't feel that before?
I think I felt I think internally, unconsciously, I had this feeling that wasn't okay. That was real selfish. I mean, I'm about myself in a sense, but I think there was a unconscious element of everything was about everyone else, community, etc.
Right.
And for a second, lost track that, no, you have to be 100 for yourself first.
Got it.
And then after that, you can be what you want or need to be for everyone else. So
Right. That's a good transition because in our conversation with Val, it was interesting to hear like the little things that I guess just like us regular people take for granted that so many overseas athletes don't get to enjoy. And she was like, one of the highlights of being a retired athlete is being able to go to stores like Bed Bath and Beyond and buy actual like plates and I don't know, like, you know, things for the house, because you never buy things. I guess this is something I never think about.
I mean, you're trying to buy cheap stuff that's nice enough because you're going to have to leave it the next year, you know, with the one-off contracts. You don't get to really think about, I will have this thing in my home for a long time and invest in something nice. So it's actually a topic of conversation I've heard a few times with older players, like, oh, I can't wait to design my house or be able to make this little space in my house or whatnot. So it is interesting, but you know, I guess we do take it. We don't realize how big of a moment it is. And then I guess normal people that get to do it every day or throughout their lives take it for granted that how nice it is to have something, a stable place to create and build a home.
So yeah, Val was, shouldn't have forgotten, but I've forgotten that she, you know, has family in Ukraine, and her talking about, you know, that the war situation and what it was like for her to kind of go through a tough time with adjustment to retired life, and some of the things that she was complaining to her dad about, and her dad is still in Ukraine, and just, you know, all this perspective of like when you're playing, when you're not playing, what someone else is going on in the world. And it sounded like she went through a lot of stuff and also just took the necessary steps for herself to figure out, you know, kind of, I guess, situate yourself. And I think the last two episodes, the first one being with Angie, I think both of them kind of touch on the fact that so much of your identity is tied into being an athlete and not just for, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, they both played for maybe 10 plus years, right? But not just that, because you guys play for longer than that. I mean, you guys start when you're, you know, kids, like preteens and teens. And, you know, is there, like, is that something that you think about as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think you don't think about it really until you start getting to the end. Mm-hmm. And that's where it just gets really nerve-wracking. And you're like, okay, right now it's kind of out there that you have to transition. Everyone's talking about it, but there's still no real solution to it. And so you're like, okay, how do I prepare myself for this moment that is inevitable? You just kind of start, I think, is more of an emotional, like, spiritual, internal journey that has to happen more than just, like, you do you have your resume? Have you been investing your money? All that
right
outside stuff that they try to say, oh, athletes go broke. And it's like, I think it's deeper than that. And I think it's clear it's deeper than that from the past, these two podcast episodes we've had, and especially with Vel. We are going through things, especially Vel. I mean, she talked about she started her career in 2008 and she finished it during, a moment she'll never forget for her family, the war, then also COVID. Like, it was, so it's kind of like, all right, how does a person digest all of that? How does she go through that and say, now I'm ending my career during this very big moment? Like, it's bigger than have you saved your money thus far and what job you're going to get. Yeah, I think for me, it's always been very clear that it's an emotional thing, but also starting to transition earlier than, you know, most. Those are the things I've paid attention to regardless throughout my career.
It was interesting too that to hear how Vel pretty much, like, doesn't even touch a basketball anymore. You know, like, I think, like, that the, I mean, Vel never seemed like, you know, a ball is life type of person anyway, mm-hmm. but it's just, you know, Angie obviously is still involved. Like, she's running her basketball camp around the game, whereas, like, Vel just seems, even though she has, you know, friends and connections and relationships with former players or current players, but there's a real, I don't want to give it away, but there's a really great little anecdote that she talks about the last time she touched a basketball in a gym and a little girl. It's very, like, I don't know, it's almost very movie-esque.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you have your mix. You have your ballless life individuals, and then you have those that I think everyone would attest to this who knows Vel throughout her career. I feel like since I've come into her life, she has many things and she's interested in. You know, she's not one-sided. So I think for individuals that have other interests outside of sport, it's finally an opportunity for them to dive into those things to try and transition away from, you know, something that you've lost. But then I'm sure we'll find another guest soon where we'll learn that it's not the same for everyone. And there are those that transition that are very much still in love with the game of basketball. Just like the first day they were like, I want to do this when I get older. And I know those individuals exist. So it's interesting, but I don't know. I think maybe Vel is a rare breed, possibly. I think there's more ball is life individuals compared to the Vels that have a very colorful outside life away from basketball.
Right. Like, what do you think your life is going to be like? Do you think you'll be still, like, watching games? Do you think you'll be, like, do you see yourself joining a rec league? You know what I mean? Like, a professional
league? Yeah, I don't.
Plays
yeah, I think
week.
I'll join. Yeah, I'm probably going to join other things outside of basketball. I think I'll still be the industry, of course, to some capacity, whether it be, I don't know, more so from a mentorship type level, and of course being in sport from more of a business side. But when it comes to the coaching or recruiting or scouting or training, that part I absolutely don't see myself or have the passion to go back into that space of the industry. Watching games, maybe live games, you know, that'll be fun. But I don't know if I'll have the three screens set up watching March Madness like back in the day.
All right. Well, that's, again, for those of you who didn't listen to the first episode, which you definitely should, which was Angie Bjorklund. This season of Unguarded, we focus on recently retired athletes or thinking of retiring athletes and just kind of trying to learn about their journey, their process. And we've only done two, but two very different ones. And I guess there is no, like, you know, right way or wrong way. Like, everyone has their own way. And so we're just exploring those things and we want to hear from you. So hit us up on all the social channels. And if you like this episode, please subscribe and share.
But yeah, this is season 3, episode 2, with Val Perez and her transition journey. Hope y'all enjoy it. It's episode 2, right? Season 3. What's up? We're back. This is episode 2 of season 3 of Unguarded. We're here with Valeria Perez.
I knew it. This was gonna happen. You've had years to practice, Valeria Berezinska.
Valeria, I knew it was Valeria.
I feel like I'm messing everybody up by having my Instagram set on Val Perez.
And your website.
It's because of people like Dory, after knowing me for years, still cannot say my name. Therefore, everything is Val Perez.
Well, how do you?
Man, you know, I was in the car, like, contemplating that name.
How is retirement?
Guys, I'm sorry, but I don't mean to, like, shit on my entire career, but this is the best time of my life. But I think it's also great because I've had the 14 years to, like, compare it to, you know? And I finally got where I've been, like, waiting to be for so long. I'm, like, a little bit poor, but I'm so happy. I can't explain it to you. My retirement didn't, like, I didn't do all the things that, like, it didn't go exactly as planned because of, you know, Ukraine and the war and things. So I had to, like, adjust a little bit. I don't care. This feels amazing. It's been great. It's been like I told you, I've been waiting to do this for like so many years.
When was the first?
The last four that I've been talking about retiring for like 7 or 8, but like I knew it was going to happen one day. But I think the last four I've been actually like actively like, okay, preparing, you know, I did my master's. I was like, I bought a house and I was like, okay, let me like do the things that I'm supposed to do. And it was just a matter of time. And, you know, this is the last season with timing with like the team I had, it was like great. And I was like, I don't want to ruin my, like, I want to go out on a good note. And like, that was just a amazing experience. Great team. I didn't want to like ruin it. I was like, you know what? This is a great like exclamation point. So that was great. And then, you know, from Ukraine, so the war in Ukraine started, I had plans to be home and do some things from there. That didn't happen. So I came to the States and I've been just living my life, going to dance classes, going to pottery classes. I decorated my room. I'm 36 years old, guys. This is the first time I bought a bedspread. Like, I have picture frames that they don't have pictures in them yet, but at least I put them up. That matters.
Yeah.
Thank you. Things in my room match. Look at this. I got plants in there. They're thriving.
Got a little corner.
I'm giving like a tour.
Going on.
Yeah, it's for like my reading, reflecting. You know, it's cutie.
Nice.
I know, like,
light.
People without the video, they can't see, but I'm showing my room. Yeah. My little desk and this, whatever. Like, you know, I put little shelves up. Like, y'all, this is so cool. I can't believe people, I have been living this life. I had a moment, it was like in May when I got back to Houston. I bought a food scale for my hair products, but whatever. I bought a food scale and I was sitting, like, looking at it, and I realized, like, I never have to get rid of it. because, you know, when we were overseas, the amount of pans and knives that I bought that are somewhere out in Europe just floating in the ether is ridiculous. I've spent probably like multiple thousands of dollars on things that I had to leave, you know, behind. And I don't know. And I got used to kind of like buying the cheapest thing for like reasonable price, because I'm like, I just need it for a few months. Like, it just needs to be better than the 99-cent store stuff that I had at the apartment given by the team. And this time I was like, oh crap, like I get to keep these things, you know? And it was just like, it's weird when I need something and I'm going to like buy it on Amazon or something. I'm like, oh crap, like this could be mine for, you know, not forever, but like whatever, forever.
Oh, wow.
And that, it was like a really, I don't know, it was like a little emotional moment over a food scale, you know? And I was like, wow, like I don't have to give away, leave behind or throw away things anymore. Like, these are mine and, you know, they can stay with me and I can actually invest in like quality things. I bought actual like cookware. This stuff is so exciting to me. Like, regular people looking at me, they're like, what the heck is wrong with you? And I'm just like, are you kidding me? You have been able to like use good pans and pots your whole life. Like, you don't know what you have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are the things that I get excited about these days.
No. Like, Joy, do you remember when you started your career? Like, at what point in an athlete's career do they think about the end of their career? Like, do you kind of plan that, or does it just kind of creep up on you?
I think it creeps up on you. I've never been the type to think about marriage and kids. Not that I didn't want it, it just, I never like set a date. I wasn't the type like, oh, by 25 I want this and I'll have this. I know I want those things and I know I want family and what I think the future will hold, but I never planned it, like set a date on it. But I think the retirement thought and like when you're gonna like be a real grown up in this world, it just creeps up on you, I guess. Like, you start to be like, all right, I don't think I'm gonna do this life anymore. I've had enough. Let's see what's next. It creeps up on you. For me, I had goals that I knew I wanted to. For me, it was always just like, I want to transition well. I don't want to transition badly, but I never thought when that was going to be. I just always kind of paid attention.
Val, so when you knew it, when you decided that it was going to be your last season, did it change the way you approached it? Did you play differently?
Yeah, I think one of the things that helped me that I liked kind of with that perspective, it was like not having to worry about the next season. I just purely wanted to do well for this, like, you know, for my current season. I think I was able to be more like engaged with my team and be, I'm already like not a selfish player, but like even more selfless. I was kind of like, okay, if I can help you set you up for next season, because, you know, when you play a year to year contract, you're playing this season for the next. This is your recruiting tool, let's say, for the next season. That's going to determine your salary, what team's going to pick you up, et cetera, et cetera. So I think not having that pressure really helped. I was just like, it doesn't matter. I can just go out there and just play, you know, and enjoy. It didn't diminish my like desire to play or to win. It was just, because naturally, like, I want to play in a more team environment and pass more. And like, I don't necessarily care to like be the best player, like the highest score. I think I was able to like lean into that a bit more, and enjoy really like the team dynamic, you know, and not have to worry about what are my stats going to be, like where am I going to go next season, blah blah blah. Like, I wasn't rushing necessarily the summer, because usually I'm like, oh my god, I can't wait till this is over so I can enjoy my summer, because I have a short period of time and then I have to go back overseas. And this time it was like, this is the last of the last. So I think I was able to like slow down and take it in. But then, of course, my last 2 months were completely ruined by the war in Ukraine. And I just, as much as I was trying to, I think I checked out on like a, I don't know, emotional, like I was exhausted and stressed, you know, not sleeping. Like, then my mom was with me for the last 2 months, and you know, it was still a lot of, all of that was new. I think now we're sadly or whatever, but like more used to the fact that that's our new normal with the war and everything. But at that time it was like, it madness. And I'm like, I don't care about basketball. Like, this is so trivial. You know, if someone is like yelling about the game or a play, and I'm just like, who cares? Like, people are getting bombed. Like, my dad can't leave the country. Like, I don't fucking care about this. Like, this is, I don't know. It just became so secondary. And I kind of obviously wish that didn't happen, because I would have wanted to, you know, fully enjoy my season, but it is what it is. So it was kind of sad. I was like, dang, like, I, you know, nobody wants to end on like a stressful war season and whatnot, but honestly, all things considered, I think it was great.
How was that last game for you?
You've been through it all.
Last game, do I ever? It was horrible. It was so horrible, guys. Oh my gosh.
Why?
We played so bad. We lost in the finals. I don't like it. I couldn't talk about it for like months after. So we were like, should have won, whatever. I think we lost one game the whole season. We beat them the first game by, like, I don't know, 15, 20. It was something, like, significant amount, maybe less than that. But lost the second game at home. And the third game, yeah, we were down 20 at halftime. I didn't want to come out. I was like, what is going on? Like, and then we ended up catching up in the third or fourth quarter, whatever. So it was just such a roller coaster. I made my, you know, last three that, like, it was close. Like, it either tied the game or it did something. That was my last main shot. And then the way my career started, it ended with a foul. So I fouled out in my last game. And I just honestly, as much as I hate it, it's also like symbolic. It's just my entire career. Like, my first memory I remember from Ukraine when I started playing basketball was us playing, and this girl shot from like a free throw line, like a jumper. And I fouled, like, you know, you give like high five to each other. Basically, I like high fived her and fouled her. And my coach caused the scene and didn't want to finish the game. It was like a big thing. And that's like one of my first memories of like, you know, playing basketball. And that just happened to be my last as well. So I think it just came full circle. It was the, like I said, the best team environment I've ever been in. And I think like some people didn't really realize, and we kept them telling, like the older players, we kept them being like, hey guys, this is actually not normal. This is not a frequent thing that like everyone gets along so well, and we just like look out for each other. Like the team atmosphere was just so welcoming, inviting. We didn't have a conflict the entire season. Like nobody argued, you know, everybody was kind of on the same page. And I think we kind of knew that was coming to an end. So that was like more of a sad thing. You know, this is the best, like the best case scenario for me to end on this note. I would have actually been sad if I like decided to go play somewhere in the summer or like then half a season, because I wanted to end my career with those people. And honestly, when I got back home, because my friends keep asking, they're like, when are we going to celebrate your like retirement? And I'm like, I'm retired. I'm done. It's gone. Like, it's not even, I don't know. It seems so far removed. Like, honestly, I've kind of felt that way when I would go overseas. I'm like, dang, this is like my other life, you know, my other personality, like not personality, but it's like you, different parts of you are required to be turned on, where in the summer, some of those like parts are turned off, you know? So I already kind of felt like I was living like kind of two parallel lives. You know, my summers were so different from my seasons. So when I came here, I was like, you know, when I was done with the season, I was just like, it seems like almost like a movie I watched, or like a dream that I had, but like, you know, like a dream that when you like experience all the emotions and feelings, that's how it felt. It was like, wow, that was like a long, very intricate dream, because none of that is a part of my life here. You know, I definitely got to the top. It was like, if I had, you know, 100 units of like desire to play basketball and like the energy for it, I reached like 99.9. It was like borderline about to spill over into like, I don't effing want to be here. So I think I reached like the perfect point at which to stop, to where I still think positively about my, you know, my career, but I didn't overdo it to where I'm like, oh God, like, that was horrible. You know, I suffered, even though the last few years were, you know, harder than needed to be.
Are there clues that you can kind of know, like, all right, it's over? I guess it's something obviously internally that you have to process for yourself. But I guess the first question was kind of like, when, what are some of those things from your time playing or maybe seeing people retire before you made that decision? Are there some kind of, like, kind of common themes around when it's like about that time to kind of let it go?
I think, well, for me, it was, you know, it's going to have to end. And one of the things I didn't want to happen is I didn't want to, A, go out on the injury, or B, like, not be signed, or, you know, people aren't offering you what you're used to. Kind of like, I didn't want the decline to happen. So that was one of my things. And I feel like in terms of my body, I still could have played probably another 4 years. Like, I felt fine. But what started to happen is I'm like, okay, you kind of, I mean, I played 14 years. That was a long time. You get to experience things that kind of like are available to you. You know, I've done like the EuroLeague, the EuroCup, like I've traveled. Like at some point it becomes like, all right, this is exciting. It's great. But like, it's repetitive. There's more to life than this. Mm-hmm. And I've always been very plugged into my like life outside of basketball in the summer. Like my friend circles are not athlete. Like, I mean, my athlete friends are, you know, I have them, but like at home, I'm friends with very regular everyday people. And I just see like things that they get to experience. And like little things like, you know, having my own place, I just started to notice more and more that the things that I was giving up, I was kind of like longing for them more often. I know that there's always a trade-off, right? Even now I'm not playing, but like, yeah, I do miss working 2 hours per day or whatever it was. But then I'm like, I also have done it enough to where I want new problems. That's like the best way. Like in one sentence, I was tired of solving the same problems. And I know like life is not going to be easy and peachy, but like I was ready for a different set of problems to work on. I just feel like every season, like it wasn't offering me anything new. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm never going to be ready in the sense of like, here, the door's closed, like you can't play, like you have to, you know, make that decision. And yes, I know that I can still keep playing and all this, but like,
I was gonna say, emotionally, did you just feel like, because for me sometimes I just feel like, not that, not on some like I'm higher or just like this, the world of the overseas world, like you've outgrown.
Yes.
Like,
no, absolutely.
It's the same stuff, the same stories, the same people talking about the same shit, you know?
It's no, absolutely. And that's what like, I mean. You kind of get to the point that it's okay. You're not offering me anything new. I'm dealing with the same type of stuff over and over. And like nothing is changing really. And then kind of, because I'm plugged into like, you know, outside world, I see the things that my friends are doing, what they get to experience. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You have a different set of problems, but like, I don't want the same thing for the rest of my life. I'm very big on experiencing different things from different perspectives. So like I've experienced life as an athlete. Now I want to experience life as a non-athlete, you know, doing whatever, whoever I'm going to be, you know, doing something else. It's just, there's so many of them. And I feel like, yeah, like I've done it. You experience it, you move on. Like there is a, I don't know. There's more to discover. The world is so much bigger than a sport. And I want that.
I mean, I think you have a lot of, obviously you do have a different group of people around you. I would think there's a large group of athletes that it's just athletes in their mm-hmm. circle. But for as the emotional piece of walking away, like the very beginning, I know you is still kind of new. It's only still been, what, I don't even know how many months.
Like 7 months or something. Like
7, 6, yeah. But emotionally.
Like, honestly, it was relief. I had so many different, I've done different like therapies. I did like psychedelic therapies and like just by myself, like meditations and stuff to kind of like process the whole thing. It was overwhelming and relieving. So I think I didn't understand how difficult what I did was and what all of us do, like how difficult it is to be a professional athlete. because everyone around you does it. And that's the only thing you've known to do most of your life. So it just kind of seems like, well, that's what everybody's doing. Like, it's fine. And, you know, my friends or like random people I'd meet, they'd be like, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. Like what you're doing is so hard. And I used to always be like, all right, you're just probably weak or something. I don't know. Like that was in my head. I'm like, I don't know. I know it's mean, but whatever. That's what I thought. And now that I'm done, guys, I look back and I'm like, what in the hot hell? That was so hard. I don't know. Just the, and I guess it was easier because you have like a structured life. So you have to do those things, but it's still not, it doesn't make them easier. It's just that you got used to it and you like pushed through. Because now I look back and I'm like, there is no way I'm going to the gym twice a day. Like that was nuts. Nuts. All the travel and all the like being alone and just mentally having to like get up and be ready and you don't have another option. Like that stuff is difficult. And like, I think the overwhelm of it was from realizing like you did a very hard thing for a very long time. Like I left home at 14, spoke no English. I wasn't like great at basketball and went to another country. And like, it took a life of its own. And I feel like by the time I was like, oh, I have other interests. Cause like basketball is not my entire life. Like I have a lot of different interests and hobbies. I've always been interested in them, but I couldn't really pursue them. You know, I feel like, you know, by the time I was 20s, in my mid 20s, I'm like, okay, well, crap. Like, that's all I've been doing. That's kind of all I know. How do I transition now? And then, you know, I'm from Ukraine. I was trying to like live in the States. Had to figure, that's a whole nother like part to figure out. And I don't know. It was overwhelming and relieving in the sense that I feel like the 14-year-old Val that started the journey and like moved to the States, you know, in 2000, I feel like she like accomplished the mission. And I finally was able to be like, I acknowledged her and like thank her. And like, it was a lot of tears, but it was like a release. I feel like, yeah, the little kid that like didn't know that this was going to take a life of its own, that's going to last 22 years. Like she was finally free. And like the other me, the adult Val can now take over and do like adult things. Cause I feel like I was on the mission for, even though with basketball, with getting out of Ukraine, and the mission was finally like accomplished. And it was just such a, it was never at the forefront of my mind, but like, that's always that what drove me. And it was kind of like, finally I can relax. The older me kind of like, I was doing my meditation. I remember it just like, I don't know. I just saw this image play in front of my mind. Like it was more of like the older me actually acknowledging that the younger me was not equipped and didn't have the support that she needed, but like still did all that stuff and like accomplished a lot for someone that was like 14, didn't speak English, had no, like at that time, like there was no FaceTime. There was no like text messaging. I didn't have a phone, like, you know, till I was in college sometime, like we didn't have video chat. Like I was on my own. That's hard. Like, if you make me do that now, like it's hard for me now to go overseas and be by myself for a year. I'm like, crap, like I feel lonely. I'm not supported. Da 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 da. Do that at 14. Like, I just thinking about it now, I'm like, this is wild. And so I think for me in that picture, it was more of like the me now be like acknowledging my younger self and giving her credit and thanking her for doing things or following through on something that she didn't even know she signed up for. Because, I mean, it was kind of like my parents that sent me overseas. Obviously, like, I agreed, but, like, what? I'm 14. Like, what am I agreeing to? I don't even know, you know? And, like, I didn't see them for the first, like, 8 years that I was, you know, after I left. So, like, our entire family dynamic changed. You know, I'm not as plugged. Like, I talk to my parents a lot, but obviously we don't have the same relationship as someone who would have grown up with their parents around, like in constant communication. Like I didn't see them for 8 years. We barely talked. We just started like FaceTiming. When FaceTime came around in 2010, I looked that up. So it was 10 years of just like typing, you know, I had the MSN, the Hotmail, whatever. But yeah, it was hard. So I feel it was more of like older me being like thanking my younger self and being like, dude, I see you. I acknowledge you. Thank you. Like you're free to go and like be a kid, however it makes sense, but it makes sense somehow in my head. In August, like, I had a meltdown. I've had several over the summer, but a meltdown about, like, what am I going to do? Because, like, my, you know, I'm waiting for my work permit. And I was just like, I'm poor. I have no money. I had to sell my stocks. And I was just, like, sick. And I'm like, you're sitting here. You have, like, tens of thousands of dollars available to you. And I'm crying over here in my family chat to my dad, who has been stuck in Ukraine, hoping his house doesn't get blown up with him inside for the last 6 months with no money. Their business is like, they can't operate because we live in the south of Ukraine, which is, it's 1 hour away from one of the territories that got occupied. So their grocery store hasn't been operating since February. Their apartment, they had to move out. So they moved to Kiev, like, kind of permanently. Thankfully they had an apartment available there. So, like, they can't sell the apartment. Their store isn't operating. Like, he's stuck there until next July, until he turns 60, before he can leave the country. Because under 60, when there's a war, like, you're not allowed to leave the country. Yeah. That's the whole, like, thing. Right. So him and my mom were separated. Like, we're trying to figure out how to, like, you know, help my mom overseas, because she's also not getting, like, it's not enough what they're offering her, you know, in help. But I'm over there like, oh my God, I have, like, all this money in stocks and I have to sell them. Poor me. And my dad, like, called me, you know, and he was like, well, like, just don't sell your house. Like, it's okay. You'll find the money. And I was like, oh my God, I already have the money. I just, like, I literally cried to him about selling my stocks. Meanwhile, he's sitting there, like, in the war. And I was like, oh my God, change of perspective. Like, I was so embarrassed. I was like, I can't believe I just called my dad. I literally stopped crying in the middle. I was like, I'm fine. Everything is fine. Life is good. I can't believe I even called you. Like, I'm fine. That was a little, a humbling moment.
Well, how sweet of him to not even, you know, to just be like, it's okay.
I know. I was like, oh, I mean, dad. Oh, that was,
you felt.
I did. It was just, I should have reached out to maybe a different group of people. But, you know, whatever. I was in distress.
I was going to ask about the psychedelics, because, you know, you say you had about three meltdowns over the summer. I guess it's kind of tied to, you know, like, yeah, it feels good to be done, but then also it's like,
mm-hmm.
Now you revamp your life. But I was gonna be like, the psychedelics part, what was that like?
I was very annoyed that last year I was playing in Belgium, which was so close to Amsterdam, and we got drug tested 9 times.
Oh yeah.
Pissed. Ooh. That was annoying. And because also, like, for anyone that has done, like, more of like a, heck, even if it's not therapeutic, like, any type of, like, shrooms or weed, like, it does not enhance your performance. So I don't get why we're not allowed to, like, use that, but whatever, that's a whole different thing. No, I've had, honestly, like, some of the most profound experiences, and I'll tell you about one of them, with, like, whether it was shrooms or weed, and I would, so I'm not just, like, you know, sitting there smoking with my buddies or something. So I use it in a very, like, ceremonial way. So I'll set my intentions. I'll prepare for, like, a day or two before. And I'm, like, usually have a thing in mind that I want to address. And since I retired, a lot of this has been around who am I and what do I need, like, I'm so used to being a certain person that I needed to be to thrive in basketball, to thrive in the situation that I was in. And I follow this trauma therapist guy, and he kind of explained the way maladaptive response works is, like, let's say it's summer, right? And you're wearing your summer clothes. Everything is great. Life is good. All of a sudden, a situation, a pleasant situation comes. Winter. Because it's cold and miserable. Temperature changes. You end up putting on, like, coat, gloves, hat, blah, 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 to keep warm. And it's good. It's working for you, right? Because you needed that response for that situation. So then when the summer, like, the problem starts when the summer comes back around and it's no longer cold, But you keep the coat and the hat and the scarf on because that's the response that you got like used to. That's what helped you before. And you're not kind of realizing that like my circumstances changed. I don't need to do this anymore. That was like a, oh my gosh, I'm trying to think of the word and I can't think of it. But anyways, that was the response that I needed, you know, to deal with it. And so that's kind of how I feel about transitioning out of basketball. Like, my life is now different. So who I became because of basketball, I don't need those things anymore. Not all of them. I need to shift a little bit. I'm now around a different demographic. Now I need different types of skills, et cetera, you know? And so this is what I've been kind of focusing on and kind of dealing with. Okay, what one of the guys I was working with, he asked me, he's like, what did basketball teach you like the most? Like, what did you get super good at? And like the first, like without even thinking, I was like shoving down my feelings. That was like my initial response, you know, because there's no place for your feelings anywhere. Like whether you like it, you don't like it, you feel one, you know, certain way today or tomorrow, it doesn't matter. What matters is you need to come there and you need to perform and nobody cares. You need to deliver. So that's a response. It helped me be good in basketball, but it doesn't help me now in you know, my life. Before I do my, you know, ceremony, I'll think about it for a few days, kind of journal or whatever. And then I just take the highest dose of whatever is available that I can, you know, handle. And so one time, it's not like, you're not like a little bit high. Like you need to, I like that it allows your mind to remove kind of like the framework that you operate in of like what's possible, what's available. It kind of removes the boundaries and you're able to make connections that don't necessarily come naturally to you in the sober state. And that's what I like about it. So one of the episodes I had early in the summer, and I just like, it was so powerful. I was outside of my house by the pool. And I smoked and I was like, okay, I'm ready. Like, you know, I have my music. It hit me a little harder than I thought it would. And I just laid down on the long chair and I started to feel like all of the stuff about the war, cause this was still pretty recent. It was like 3 months post, you know, war starting. And I felt every single like image that I've seen about it, every video I've watched, every like message I got from my parents, every like everything that has entered my like senses ever since the war, it just, all of it started, I started experiencing all of it at once. So I felt like intense heat coming off of like the top of my body. And I just saw kind of like flames and every one of those like episodes was replaying, but I was experiencing it all at once. And it was kind of like the message to me was like, what you consume matters. You might think it's like a little bit here, a little bit there. Like, oh, you know, like, yeah, that was sad, but I'm fine. You know, like I didn't cry when I read that, for example, but it all stores somewhere inside your body and it like, it affects you. So this, all of it like kind of started coming out at once. And like, and I started feeling like, okay, those little things aren't so little. It's like a cumulative trauma of like all of those episodes, you know, and like you need to be more careful of what you're letting in and how you're processing it, like it affects you. So anyways, I experienced that. That was like, that lasted for a while. And I like had to snap out of it sometimes because I was like, oh, this is like, it was intense because it was physically painful, emotionally draining. And I was like, whew, a lot. And then, so anyways, that passed. And then I had another experience. I was laying, so this is the same, it's right after. I'm laying down and it was like, this is going to sound a little crazy, but whatever. It felt like the top of my body was like opened up like a suitcase. And I started seeing like little like outfits floating out of a suitcase, but they looked like, you know, like a soul of a person. It's kind of transparent a little bit. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. Cool. I'm seeing things now. And I was like, okay, but they all look different. So what is it? And I started zooming in and this was so like heartbreaking to me, but each of those like outfits, each of those images was a moment during my career. So it only went as far back as like my first year overseas. And it was every moment that I have, like I kind of saw myself from the outside. And it's every moment that I thought or someone said to me, like, you suck, you're not good enough. Why are you even here? like, you're fat, you're this, you that. And I was just like, I wanted to cry. And like, I'm pretty sure I did. I probably did. But I was kind of like, I got to see the way I was talking to myself during all those years and the way that I interpreted other people's looks, you know, like their comments, whether it was like my stats or somebody compared me to XYZ, you know, and then just like even on the personal level, like I was 30 pounds heavier when I was like at the beginning of my career. Yeah, girl didn't know anything about nutrition or cooking or working out. Like, it was rough. So, you know, it was very jarring because over, you know, a 14-year period, like, that's a lot of, like, shit that I've said to myself or allowed others to, like, speak into me that was, you know, that was negative. And I kind of had, like, this voice from outside was like, how dare you talk to her like that? Like, who let you speak to another human in that way? And we kind of excuse it, I think, a lot of times because it's directed at you. You know, it's, oh, it's just me. Like, I have high expectations or standards or whatever. But it's like we allow ourselves to talk so badly about ourselves. Well, I did, which we wouldn't allow, you know, we wouldn't talk like that to another person. Or like, even if you hear someone say something like that about your friend, you'd be like, dude, what? Like, pause, you know, stop. Like, you would intervene in some kind of way. And I don't know. In that experience, I was just like, it made me very aware and like more mindful of the way I treat myself. And I think a lot of it did come from basketball. It's a competition. We're constantly measured. There's always your stats, your efficiency, your results on the stat sheet. You know, you get paid according to how well you perform. Like, it's just very measured thing. You do get ranked, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a lot of that seeped into like my personal, like myself and how I saw myself. And so, yeah, that was one of my very first ones when I got back from overseas. And I was like, all right, like, I know I have some work to do. So that was very like powerful experience.
I guess they do say like the trauma work. We don't even realize how much trauma we're holding from basketball.
Like, have you touched the basketball?
So I did one time.
Okay.
And it was maybe a month ago. And the only reason that happened is I go to Lifetime here in Austin, and on the way to the locker rooms, you pass the basketball courts. And I remember one time, either I came too early or something. I had a lot of time and I was like, what can I do? And I was like, let me see if I like, what happens if I go shoot? And I still have I had a ball in my trunk. So I just like grabbed the ball. I was like, okay, let me go shoot. And I just, it was cool. I feel like it was a lot easier when you don't have to make it. You know, it was just, oh, cool. I like get to shoot around. And I just didn't feel anything. I was like, it's gone. There's nothing left. And the ball was the last thing I had because I gave away all my shoes, my shorts, my tights, my sports bras. I gave away everything before the last game. I brought it to the game. So I don't have, like, you know, I was in my yoga pants and my, like, Lululemon top there shooting. Yeah, I did that. And after that, I gave the ball away to this little girl. I was like, you'll use it more than I will. So, yeah, I was completely over it.
That's like a scene off of in a movie, kind of. Yeah, like, right? The end very of symbolic. A movie. Like, you went shoot, and then, like, you gave it to a little girl and left, and the little girl starts shooting. Like, that's the movie. End of the movie.
Oh, that is super cute. I'm cute. Oh my god, that was very cute. What I do miss, and it's kind of hard, is the structure of being a player. Like, there are things that are kind of like more or less set in stone that you have to do, and then the rest of your day revolves around that. Now, you know, I have to kind of like create that for myself, and like I know that I can do the things that I need to do. But when you have too much time and no structure, they're just like a lot harder to execute. Yeah, I don't even want to like start my next career until I'm like, I figure some, like a bulk of it out, because I think, like, honestly, to me, that has been the most important thing. I was like, I don't want to jump into the next thing with like, kind of like the winter coat, you know, like we're in the summer. Like, I don't need those things, like those adaptations that I've developed. And I think that's super important because most people don't have a chance to just like pause and reset and just evaluate. We constantly are like, life is happening. You lost one job, you get another job, go here. Like, you never really like have that reset where everything stops, like the way we kind of did during the pandemic. I think a lot of people realized like, holy crap, I haven't stopped my entire life. And like now you're reevaluating and you're like, oh, I'm actually, I don't want to put up with this thing. Like, it's not helpful to me, you know, like people don't get to do that often, I think. And this is like a kind of perfect, you know, moment to do that before I jump into the next thing. Like, who do I want to become? It's not even who I want to become. I'm still myself, but like, what qualities do I want to express? You know, how do I want to be seen? What experiences do I want to have? Like, I don't want to have athlete experiences anymore. For me to not have athlete experiences, like for me to, you know, get to something else, I need to kind of like be the other part of myself. And there's a lot of parts of me that didn't really have a place to shine, to come out, to be expressed in basketball. And I think that's like the beautiful part about this transition. You know, you can create whatever you want out of your life. And I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm doing it consciously. But I think for everyone retiring, it's helpful to like start thinking about it before and then, you know, kind of have a transitional plan. You don't know what it's like to retire until you do. You know, there's no, the summer is not the same as your, like my retirement summer. Like there's nothing ahead for, because like in the regularly, like usually in the summer, you're like, I only have 3 months and there's something at the end of that. But now there's nothing. And it's like, it's been so hard for me to even imagine future. Cause I'm like, I don't know what that looks like. I have no idea what to even imagine, like work, like what is work? What is like, where am I going to live? Like now I can live wherever I want. It's just, it's a lot. And I think like we do it, like a lot of people retire a bit unconsciously, haphazardly, like they don't put in the work that, you know, to make their life better, to like benefit from their basketball experience.
If there's like three things that you could say or advise that 14-year-old girl who went there and about like what she's about to experience as a basketball player, yeah, what would you say?
Oh man, I think like the first thing that pops into my head is like, A, like you will be okay. Like no matter what happens, the bad, the good, the ugly, whatever, you'll always come out, like you'll be fine. Those are just life experiences. Sometimes they're shitty, but like at the end of the day, we're always okay. Like nothing is life ending unless it's literally life ending. But like everything, yeah, I feel like I stressed a lot about things that were not even, you know, inconsequential. The second, I mean, going with the story I shared is about like, kind of like you have to love and respect yourself. And it's not a badge of honor to beat yourself down and say, I have high standards for myself. And like, you know, therefore, I don't know, I have 18% body fat, but like, I'm still going to call myself fat. Like, or something like that. Like, I think like self-love, like it's a word that gets thrown around a lot now these days, but it's not the pampering. It's like the way what's happening when no one can hear or see, like it's what's happening inside of your head. The self-love piece. And this is something like I didn't struggle with. I knew, but I would even reiterate it, that people matter and like relationships are how you're going to get ahead in life. Because not from day one, I have gotten where I am through connecting with people, being like genuine with them and just being myself. And then whoever, you know, connects with that, they're there because they want to be there. Like I don't have to lure them in with something. There's no games that have to be played. I'm me. And those that see me, they're there, you know, for me. And I think I've had amazing support, you know, through high school. I lived with two different families in college. And after one of my friends took me in, essentially, and then my last 7 years, I lived with a family, like they completely took care of me. People, you know, just the way I got jobs and everything, like it was all because of people and genuine connections and like caring about them.
Well, thank you. Jory, do you want to try saying her name on the sign off?
Valeria. I can't say the last name.
Come on, we could like just be.
Berez is stuck in my head forever. Valeria.
We're going to have podcast number 3.
Vajeska.
One of these days you're going to get
Valeria
it.
Valeria Vajeska.
How many years is it going to... Come on, man. You've seen my jersey. You've seen the scouting report. Seen my name before.
But it's just Valeria.
It's fine. It's fine.
Stop First it. Of all, Val. All
right, I'm gonna stop recording. I guess I gotta do it on myself.